I'm Will Hedrick.
And I'm Jordan Shapiro.
And this is Dog Ears and Timestamps, a book club podcast.
Into the Heartless Wood. Dude, into I didn't listen until today. I didn't listen at times any speeds, though, because the total timage of the book was only 11 hours or something.
It's a super easy read.
Yeah, you said it was an easy read, so I was like, I don't think I'm going to have to be going back over it too much. And if it was an easy read, then it was probably like kind of a fun read, you know?
And, oh, yeah.
As I was listening,
I don't mean to say easy like in a negative way.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, no, easy as in like it's easy to follow. It's like good, you know? Mm-hmm. And honestly, when you said easy, I thought good.
Yeah.
And dude, I mean, following the Lord of the Rings, it had big shoes to fill.
Right.
I am really happy. I like it. It feels.
Yeah, it's very enjoyable.
It honestly feels like a side story in a big quest to me.
Yeah, it does sort of have the feel of like, you know, these are like not necessarily that we even met like Owen or anything like that along the journey. It's just that like maybe we heard about this wood.
Yeah, this would be the village we would stumble upon along the journey, like maybe book two.
you know,
like we wouldn't. It'd be something we heard about. You know, these tree wood nymph women singing in the woods, and you like follow them, and they suck out your soul.
Wood sirens, tree sirens,
and
I like the idea of sirens. I always thought that sirens were really cool because, I mean, I've been saying it for a long time now. I just want a girlfriend that will kill me, right?
Like a praying mantis.
Yeah, exactly. And so sirens are really, you know, exactly that. And I think that that's pretty neat. And I like trees a lot, which is something that I've talked about forever and on this podcast multiple times. And so these are just like, you know, two things that I think are really neat. Trees and the hot ladies that sing to you and then rip you to pieces.
Yeah. Well, they...
this is a great book.
They started the book with, like, I was born a tree. I was like, hell yes. Like, being a tree sounds dope.
Right.
Like, if I died and turned into a tree, that would be cool.
Yeah. I want to become a tree. Like, have you seen, like... I don't know if it's popular anymore, but there was...
That should be
maybe, like, 10 years ago, there was this new thing that people found out about where, like, they just placed you, like, in a sack... When you die.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
they place
yeah,
your corpse, like, in a sack and just, you know, plant you in, like, a forest so that you become a tree, effectively. Or you just become food for a tree, really. I mean, obviously, you don't reincarnate into a tree because science, but you just become food for a tree.
Use the promo code DEATS, Dog Ears and Timestamps.
To become a tree.
Yeah, for 20%
off. So that your loved ones can save money on making you a tree.
Yeah, 20% off on becoming a tree.
Yeah.
Can you imagine if they became a sponsor of our podcast?
That'd be sweet. Yeah, like, I don't know how expensive that process is. Because while I think that would be really sweet to become a tree, like, I also don't think that I'm going to leave anybody behind that's going to pay fucking $50,000 for it to happen.
I mean, do I really think that I'm the best nutrients for a tree either? Like, where do I get off?
Right.
I can feed a tree.
Having just finished like fucking McDonald's and shit
that's
like,
exactly what a tree needs.
We
to.
Want to become trees now with all this sodium that we just pumped into our veins.
Yeah, dude. Apparently there's a big conspiracy behind the dude that did the Body Worlds exhibits. I went and saw Body Worlds 3 in Houston. It was where they did the plastination and they like turned dead people, real dead bodies into plastic.
Plastination sounds like a really dumb, made-up word that's like in a C-horror movie.
I'm pretty sure they were like a bunch of slaves.
Oh, wow.
I think there's some like horrific thing behind it. Yeah, let's not get into that. Let's talk about the podcast. We're going to get canceled. Right. They're going to find us and those Germans are going to come after us.
Right.
Because that's who made it.
Into the Heartless Wood by Joanna Ruth Meyer.
I love it, though.
It was like 210-ish pages. I read it all yesterday. And I yesterday was a relatively slow day for me at work, so I had some time to read. But like, I texted you in the morning, and I was like, okay, I'm pretty sure I'm going to be able to read 100 pages today, and then maybe I can read like another 50 or 60 when I get home.
Yeah,
I'll be ready tomorrow.
Definitely good for tomorrow.
And then like 3 hours later, I realized, oh, wait, I'm like 145 pages in. Let me text Jordan. I'm ready tonight if you want to.
I literally hadn't even started yet. But this book is so good. I mean, like I was saying, it just feels like all these, it's like they're giving all these side characters a shining moment, you know?
Mm-hmm.
It's like a small little kingdom, right?
The
like
stakes feel relatively small. Well, you know, like you said, like it feels like a side quest, right? Like the stakes are pretty small, although like we're getting into this kind of, you know, what happens if, you know, the Gwydn gets her way and then does eat the whole world. So I guess there is like a save the world aspect to it, but it doesn't feel like that.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel like your typical save the world story.
Yeah. And to be fair, we probably don't understand like the sheer vastness of this woods, because it sounds like it's leaking into parts of society that
it's getting bigger and bigger.
Like it's sneaking into the railroad tracks.
Mm-hmm.
And that was like a big catalyst moment.
Apparently it was like always growing, but it's growing way faster than they expected all of a sudden. Yeah,
and why would they put the train tracks there?
Well, I guess the assumption is that, because they built the train a number of years ago, 3, 4, 5, I don't know, but years ago. And then at that point, it was probably away from the wood. I don't know how far away from the wood, maybe a mile, fast. Maybe 2 miles. And then that's part of why whenever the courier tells Owen, yeah, it's in the forest now. Owen's like, excuse me?
You remember that?
Because he couldn't believe that it had grown that quickly.
Yeah. Do you remember that Family Guy like skit? It was like one of those side flash memories that was, it was like the icebergs were like, it was talking about how like the glacial ice caps were like melting and slowly moving at like a mile every year or something.
I'm not sure I remember that one.
And it was like an Eskimo. He was out there fishing and some newscaster was like, move, you've got to get out of the way. You're not safe. Like, it's stupid.
I think I remember that one. Yeah.
I can just imagine these people in this time period be like, the woods are gaining on us. I can't believe the rate at which they're growing. Like,
right.
Yeah, I don't know. And there's some mystery, too, behind our
You want to know fast? You should see ice. Ice moves fast.
And, I mean, and there's some shrouded mystery behind our lord, who is Owen's dad. Mm-hmm. And apparently he's, like, Scottish or Irish in my version.
I view them as, like, obviously you're listening to it, but I view these as, like, a Germanic people.
Well, you're wrong.
No, I'm teasing. But they totally could be like.
Yeah, it's weird because he's the only one with an accent.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, and it's pretty McGonagall, so I would say Scottish.
There are other countries that exist. We know that much, but I don't know where he comes from. I guess we're supposed to believe that he comes from the country that they live in.
Well, and he's okay. And
he went to the academy and one of the cities, but I don't know.
Oh, yeah, when he started his trade or whatever?
Yeah, he went to the academy to become an astronomer, and that's where he met his wife, who was a cellist. And then
Owen?
No, his dad.
I was like, what? I thought his dad said you can't be an astronomist and you have to get a trade, which is what happens. I just didn't remember that we got his dad's storyline. Right.
Yeah, so I don't know. It's ambiguous. It doesn't describe anything except for... Because these are obviously fake countries.
Mm-hmm.
Then it's a fake world because there's magic, but... I don't know what it's supposed to be analogous to. I just assumed it was kind of like a Northern European ish.
Yeah, and our Lord has some sort of maybe not influence, but he has some importance to the main king, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And how does that work? Like, would he be king and then...
Well, he's just the king's astronomer. That's all he is.
But doesn't he have his own tower? He like lives there in his own castle.
It's not a castle, it's a house. They just have, it's just a nice house, and they have an observatory at the top of the house because he's the king's astronomer.
You're not using your imagination like I am. In my world, okay, so this is what I've been imagining, and
I think it's just 3 stories.
That's pretty big.
I mean, it's big.
No, this is what I've been imagining. I've been imagining some sort of... Honestly, literally, like, I put it kind of in a Game of Thrones world map, and I was just like, these guys are from the north. And I made it, like, Ned Stark, that, like, kind of how Winterfell is, like, a small... Like, in the show, even, when you saw Winterfell, it's like...
It's tiny compared to pretty much every
and
other
he's,
place.
And he's, like, the lord of that area. But is he a king, or is he the lord? And then there's the... And then King Robert, and he was Lord Stark.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's
and he was
that's
the
how
warden
I,
of the north as well, which is an additional title to being the lord of Winterfell.
Right, and they never completely allied with him, right? Like, didn't they always stand on that? Doesn't matter, different book. So that's sort of how I imagined it, though, is that like he was his own like sort of king because he lived like right neighboring the forest, and he was also on like some astronomy hotspot, so he could also look and see the stars. And then that the king, since he was the king's astronomer, and he But it almost seemed like he was the king's astronomer, and that was not a job before this guy came into the picture. You know what I mean?
Well, it's not a job, like, publicly, because right, the king doesn't want the people to know that he puts any stock in the movement of the stars, because there's a fine line between science and magic. And magic is obviously very bad in this world, because the forest is full of magic, and the forest only murders everybody.
Yeah.
So he's just the king's astronomer. We don't know why the king needs to know what the star movements are. I suppose that's something that will be revealed in the second half of the book. But he's also, like, to cover up being the astronomer so that he looks like he just has a regular job, he just goes and works at a fucking farm every day. So he's definitely not just like a lord or anything, you know. He just has a nice house paid for by the king because he's the king's astronomer.
I mean, Lord Stark went out into the woods with his men a lot, so... I don't know. I feel like Ned got his hands dirty.
I mean, this guy built his own wall by himself with his own hands. He's not really a lord. He just, you know.
But he's like the highest ranking guy in this town, right? In the town neighboring.
I don't think so. He doesn't get to tell people I'm the king's astronomer or anything. Like, it's a secret.
Oh, weird. Because in my mind, I built it differently. Okay. In my mind, I was bragging too before the podcast. I was like, look how much I listened to this book. And okay. In my mind, it was much more, it was just like slightly more grandiose because it was only like, it was only Winterfell, you know?
Right.
It's not like I was imagining, you know, King's Landing.
Wait, right.
Is that where?
That's where the Iron Throne sits.
Where's
the Red Keep.
Where's what I'm thinking of though? I meant
Winterfell in the north?
No, I meant the ones that the Lannisters own.
Castamere. Casterly Rock.
Yeah, it sounds basically just as good as Castle City. What's God, I just said it.
It's Casterly Rock, right?
No. What was the main one? The one where they
aren't. Oh, King's Landing?
King's Landing.
Yeah.
Casterly Rock, to me, sounded just as good as King's Landing.
I assumed so, but I think we were supposed to believe that because they were the rich ones or whatever, right? Even though that they had been broke for like a generation or something like that.
And I think they almost were named like, and they almost made that like the where the Iron Throne was going to be or something like that. Doesn't matter. And I didn't imagine anything grandiose like Casterly Rock. I imagined like a more humble abode, and then also a lord that, well, I guess he's not a lord, but they must have known something was up because it seemed like he went. I guess he could have just visited him in his house. It seemed to me like he went into a castle, like he went to visit him in his small castle. Because he like, I guess it was just his son greeting him too. Jeez, it's all shrinking as I'm remembering. Because it was just that one guy that came to his house.
Yeah, just the
Do
one.
Do they live on the edge of the woods in their house, and they're the only? And it's a little town, or it's
there's
just
a little
him?
Town, but they're like 3 miles away from the town.
Okay, that's
and the town
also
is like 5 miles away from the wood, or something like that, is what they say. Which is also like, by standards of everybody else in the kingdom, way too fucking close to the wood.
I see how my imagination so they're like made stupid. It more like they were in a castles type situation, because like, it's not like anyone has sought their counsel on anything, you know?
Right.
And the kids could kind of do whatever they wanted there. Mm-hmm. So I was just like, all right, well, they're little lordlings. Of course they can. It all is coming to me now. Okay, cool. All right, well, so when that guy came to visit him, he was visiting from the king. He had wax in his ears because he couldn't handle the
sounds
song. From the woods.
Yeah,
and then he came to get the astronomer's notes. But he was like a new guy. Who had never seen? So why was that all new? Or why was that all important for this time?
I think it was just so that we could get the story of the forest overgrowing the train tracks.
Oh, okay.
Because he was somebody that had been on guard detail for repairing the train tracks, which is something they had been doing for 6 months very regularly or something like that. He said.
Yeah.
And so if it had been like one of the guys who always came to pick it up, it would. I mean, they could still say like, "Oh yeah, I had to do guard duty on the train tracks last week, and guess what happened?" Like, but it makes a little bit more sense for it to be like, "This is a new guy, and he also had to do this other job that we don't know about because this is news to our character that the train tracks are being overrun by the forest.
We'll probably run into him again later too, because it seems like it was just the king's, one of the king's men or whatever. Like it seemed like it was just a guard.
It was anybody that could be trusted to go get the star charts and keep their mouth shut about it.
Yeah. And since it's somebody different who actually did interact with our hero, I guess, he'll probably come up later, I feel like.
Very well could.
Cool. Okay. So we'll see him later, guaranteed. And, okay. So he was riding on the train tracks because he was getting a new job as a train conductor. No, what was he getting a new job?
He was when Owen first gets in trouble. Yeah. He was riding on the train to go to the academy to turn in the star charts for the year.
Got it.
In addition to turning in star charts to the king, all the astronomers that could feasibly turn in their star charts to the academy did so for the furtherment of knowledge. It's, you know, it's a scientists, they do that shit, you know, you publish your findings and stuff like that is effectively what they were doing. And so he was going, because his dad's a day laborer on a farm, he was like, okay, well, this is the time of the year I'm taking the year's or the quarter's star charts to the academy to turn in to the library or wherever. And but then that's where he gets derailed.
Okay.
And meets, you know, our wooded lady of our dreams.
Yeah, so that was an interesting scene, too, because he was on the train tracks, and I feel like everyone else was thrown into this trance from the music, but he was like, I need to get off this train. And then he jumps off the train,
mm-hmm.
and then the train crashes. Right?
No, the train crashes with him in it. Because he, the train crashes with him in it because he lands by just lucky, you know, in the same way that any main character survives, a catalyst of the story.
I guess a lot of people survived the crash, but they didn't survive the siren.
Yeah. We see the person, the old man that was sitting near him in his car, because I think he and that older man were the only people in the car that they were in. We see that guy dies because in the crash, he breaks his neck.
Oh.
But Owen survives. He sustains some minor injury, but he survives.
It's like some knee cuts and stuff.
And then he catches the song while he's still in the train and then, compels himself to go out. And he's conscious the whole time.
Well,
that's the thing is that it doesn't seem like any of them ever lose consciousness while they're under the spell of the song.
I thought he like woke up several hours later in a daze.
After Saren releases him.
I thought like...
Because she's going down the line, killing everybody that she finds in the cars, and then he's literally the last person that she comes across, and then is like, run.
Yeah.
And then he runs for several hours down the tracks until he collapses and then wakes up to find his father finding him.
Okay.
But he's totally conscious through... I mean, like, I think he falls asleep on the train and is woken by the crash, I think.
Okay.
Because it's only like maybe 2 hours into the train ride or something like that, if I remember correctly. He describes it as feeling like it wasn't that long into the train ride. It wasn't like, you know, half the day through or anything like that. And then, like any crash, it was just sudden. I don't remember if it was sudden because he wakes up to it or if it was just like any crash and it was just super sudden. You know, like, you know, anybody that's been in any sort of a vehicle crash, it's just immediate. You never see it coming unless, you know, you're in a weird situation where you literally get to see the other thing coming. And so, I mean, you know, he might not have been conscious up to that point, but once it happens, he's conscious.
Yeah. Okay. And then we were talking about this earlier, but like the only reason we can kind of figure out that she spares him is because his soul is super bright looking.
Yeah. Something about him stands out to her.
Yeah. And then later, I think it has a lot to do with.
I think it was also because his sister was the last in line. On that train, all the souls that she was taking, the orb was already, you know, full enough, and she's already evidently been the thought of slaughtering and stealing souls is starting to weigh on her, you know, conscious, even though she doesn't realize that she has a conscious, because even as she's walking up to him, because as soon as he collapses after having escaping, it then goes to a chapter in her perspective during those moments, and she's walking up to him thinking like, I'm so like, you know, the orb is so fucking heavy. Like, I don't like this, but you know, not in so many words, but she's expressing those sentiments and then comes across him and is like, oh, something's off about this one. I think I can let him go. She won't know. There's enough souls in the orb. So I think she's already starting to go down the path of, it, I don't know that I agree with this life anymore.
Yeah, for sure. Especially because since she's described so much as like this fully brainwashed monster, like her her perspectives are the monster, you know,
right,
like
getting
the chapter titles.
She doesn't know anything else.
Yeah, she is a servant of her mother, and she says it a lot too, just like her sisters. And you're right, though. I wonder if he was the catalyst, or what was the catalyst that's starting to make her
he's definitely like the catalyst, but she was already moving in that direction. But then coming across him and his, you know, special soul or whatever was like, you know, the whatever you want to describe it as, the train track shifting, or, you know, whatever they call it whenever they change the track on a train, or the kick.
Good analogy.
You know, whatever.
Because they're on a train.
Yeah. There you go.
I need to quit clicking. Sorry. good analogy.
But she's definitely already sort of like considering the idea that she doesn't want to do whatever it is that she's doing. Though she doesn't have any way to express that even to herself, I don't think. Because she doesn't understand emotions. She doesn't think that she has emotions or a soul. She doesn't understand morality. She doesn't understand anything because her only perspective was being born as a monster.
She's got all the souls.
Right, yeah.
Okay, cool. Okay, so she let them go. I don't know why I'm going through the book beat by beat, but like, I don't know. I mean, they start to fall for each other, but I think she really starts to make progress when, or maybe she... It seemed like it was extra significant when his sister was in the woods. Like, they both went into the woods together.
Well, that's when they get to actually interact with each other.
Well, and she, but like, the sister was laughing and having... This was before they interacted. Like, the sister was laughing and having fun, and she's like, nobody does that in my woods. Like, what? How cool.
Right, yeah.
And she probably has a similar soul brightness, to the brother. Maybe not, but... and then his love for the sister was unique. And then they had their interaction, of course, where they spoke. But the sister was out. Why was she knocked out?
Because Saren knocked her out. Yeah. Not with like a Gohan chop to the back of the head or anything, but like, used Siren tree magic, whatever.
Yeah, that was when she realized probably that it was like something special about him.
Yeah.
Like when, because probably the first time she didn't know what she was doing, and then the next time she was like, no, there is really something. Like, she realized it was, like, that's when
right,
she,
yeah. Whatever it is, it's more tied to whatever it is that she's feeling, if they are feelings from her perspective, it has to do with him, not just, you know, whatever it is that she may have previously not understood was affecting her.
Dude, this is like Romeo and Juliet, man. It's like
Isn't it? I feel like they were just immediately like, oh, hey, that one's hot. I like that one. Oh, but that one's from the family that my family doesn't like. That means I want that one more. That's all that story is.
Same. The sirens killed his mom.
One of the most famous plays by one of the, most highly touted writers of all time. But I mean, that's all that story is.
Same, dude.
It starts off literally saying they are star-crossed lovers. They have no choice to be in love, it's kind of, when you think about it, it kind of cheapens the whole thing.
Well, do you want to cheapen this story or not? I'm cheapening it because it feels the same. I'm worried that she's going to, like, they're falling in love, obviously, and then she's going to fall in love, and then at the end, she's just going to have to turn into, like, the forest tree or whatever and control it from being evil, and he's probably going to kill himself, Romeo and Juliet. So, like...
I think that... Yeah, because we don't know what's going to happen, or, like, what the big thing is. Because, like, so the Gwydn made the sirens to go collect souls to feed to the Heartless Tree, which was a tree that she created to convert souls into power for the wood, which is a direct feed into her for power.
Yeah.
And it's also that she can wage war against the Soul Eater, which is just something that we didn't even know about until, like, maybe like six chapters ago, whenever Saren first is just like, oh yeah, by the way, my mom's gonna fight this dude called, not dude, this thing called the Soul Eater at some point, and that's why she does what she does. And no one's like, I don't care. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about right now. Let's dance.
Yeah, and but I know I know I sound dumb, but she sounds like the Soul Eater. Mom sounds like the Soul Eater.
Well, I think what it might be, we get one clue as to what the Soul Eater is, right? And there's a weird sort of throwaway line that the rose-crowned siren says, and it says something about the Soul Eater is bringing a bunch of iron here. And so I think that the Soul Eater might be the king.
Oh, no.
And it's some otherworldly spirit that is either inhabiting the king or is like worm-tonguing the king or something to that effect, right? And so that's the only sort of hint that we get as to what the Soul Eater is. It's just that one throwaway line.
Hmm.
And it might truly be a throwaway line or it might be intended as a clue.
Nice pickup. Good job.
But other than that, yeah, it's just like two or three mentions of just the word Soul Eater. Like, what does that mean?
Yeah, ooga booga. It's like...
Right. And the Gwyn changes the stars that, you know, the night that everything really takes off because she's signaling that she's ready to fight the Soul Eater or something like that.
Man, I feel like it's going to be some twisted thing like the Soul Eater is her because it got out of hand and now it's this like she created the tree to harvest the souls into power and now it's some suck on her life force where like she has to keep feeding it these souls. So like she created this monster that, you know, like she created the Soul Eater on accident and now she's like.
But I think the Soul Eater, and again, they only mentioned a couple times, so they may not have mentioned anything really about the timeline of the Soul Eater, but I feel like the Soul Eater has always been around. I don't think that it's something that's just like recent. Like she's been doing what she's been doing for a very, very, very long time because she's going to fight the Soul Eater.
And have they been along? They've been around different amounts of time.
Well, the daughters have been around for centuries at this point.
Because we don't have
a real number, but it's a very long time.
Yeah, I have this feeling like it got twisted into legend, you know, and like even. Kind of like the ants don't know what their wives look like. This is they. Like, I don't know, because the Soul Eater sounds like almost anything that just goes bump in the night that could take away your kids when you're not looking or take.
But
away
they're the only ones that say Soul Eater. It's never any of the humans that say Soul Eater.
Really?
Yeah. It's only the Sirens and the Gwyn.
Well, never mind.
So that's the only thing that sort of, you know, makes it seem like it's.
It's not that.
You know, it's a part of whatever their story is. Because they're the only ones that say anything about it. Like, I think maybe Owen's mom says it, but that's just because she's been, you know, enslaved to the Gwyn for like a year at this point or something. Like maybe a year and a half at this point, something like that. And so she's like, you know, in the know or whatever.
And that's why she was killed.
Yeah, well, she had like a particularly strong soul or whatever, mm-hmm. right? And so Saren kidnaps her because you have to have a strong soul to be able to attend the Heartless Tree. Mm. The Heartless Tree needs somebody to attend it for some reason, which is something that doesn't get explained to us. It's just said that has to happen. And so every now and then they have to go get a new human because ultimately the human that's attending the Heartless Tree can't... Oh, no, the human... uses the power of the Heartless Tree to create the orbs, which the daughters then go and use to suck up the souls to feed back into the wood.
Yeah, so
that's what his mom had been doing was creating the orbs. And apparently somebody can only... Yeah, because she tore out her own heart.
Oh.
In front of him.
So do you think that...
Because she wanted, like, she had, like, one, having been doing it for as long as she did, she, like, suddenly, like, she was able to understand some level of the power of the wood or something like that. And she blesses him and says, okay, now the Gwyn can't hurt you. And my purpose is served. And then she tears out her own heart so that she no longer has to serve the Gwyn.
Okay.
And So they'll have to replace her if they want to make more orbs. But I think that at the very least, that's not going to be a concern for the Gwyn because the Gwyn's ready to fight the Soul Eater. The second half of the book is going to be like, you know,
it's going
to
be
either the war happening and then Saren and Owen stopping it, or the war doesn't get to that point because Saren and Owen stop the Gwyn before the war even starts. We get like a weird spinning silver situation where like the two lovers like defeat both of the bad guys at the same time.
Yeah. It's going to be lit.
Even though one of the bad guys becomes the husband of one of the main characters in that story. I still think that was a really weird thing. Like, how do you,
yeah,
this dude that was like committing genocide upon your people purposely for so long. He's like, now he's your husband. What? You're okay with that now? Which is also like why I don't think that Saren and Owen can be together, because even though, like, yeah, she has a change of heart and, like, she no longer wants to be a monster, she has still slaughtered thousands of humans. Mm-hmm. Like, you can't forget that that happened ever, I wouldn't think. But it's a young adult novel at the same time, right? So it's easy to romanticize things and not think about that sort of heavy consequence of, you know, falling in love with somebody that's, you know, literally murdered more people than you've ever met.
Love has no bounds.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. Honestly, man, like, now I don't even know what to say about the book. I feel like we talked about every section of everything that's happened. We've speculated. We've just done it so quickly. What else do you have?
Not really anything. I mean, there's not really a whole lot that happens in this first half.
Right.
It's pretty obviously setting up whatever it is going to happen in the second half. And I'm mildly worried that the second half is going to have too much happening.
I don't know. I'm excited. I think the second half, I hope it plays out well. Like you said, it could just be crazy action-packed and trying to wrap it all up too quickly. Yeah. But I don't know. I don't think it's going to go beyond this book. It doesn't feel like it. It feels just like a fun side story. And it's good. No, I like it. I think it's going
to
end.
The pacing is just odd because they're coming to this, like, they started throwing out this Soul Eater stuff, you know, somewhere in the, you know, last third of this section. And I was just like, wait, so there's like a save the world aspect of this story all of a sudden, but we spent like the first two thirds of this half just getting to the point where we named one of the characters. Like,
yeah, and why does it matter that the king wants his dad's
the star chart stuff,
unless that was literally just a catalyst to get him on a train so that he could get thrown into, like,
right,
so that,
which would be fine because it's in this, like, you know,
it just felt like a setup for a
industrial revolution time era period.
Uh-huh.
But there's still kind of magic in the world, so, like, people wouldn't have been really paying attention to the stars, at least not the common people would have been paying attention to the stars back then, unless you were, like, you know, a sailor or something like that, had to navigate using them. But kings of old in real life had astronomers because they wanted to believe that the stars could tell them the future or whatever. And it was actually a really dangerous job to have. Like, a lot of astronomers were killed by the kings because the kings didn't like what they predicted. Like, you didn't want to be an astronomer almost back then. So, I mean, the stakes of being a secret astronomer to the king is not an unbelievable plot device.
Yeah.
Even if it is, like you said, just a plot device to give some connection to the kingdom and a reason for him to have to go to the other city to do something and therefore get him into the woods. And certainly, like, if the king turns out to be the Soul Eater.
Exactly. That's what I was just
thinking. Then it's, you know, good to have that additional connection to him.
For sure.
And his dad just got taken in for treason at the very end there. So there's something else happening there that, you know, we don't know. It just seems like all of a sudden all this stuff is starting to happen. There's like a save the world element. His dad's being taken in for treason. His mom blessed him with some wood magic and then tore her heart out. And now we hate Saren because Saren was the baddie that lured his mom in.
But we still love her.
But then we also have only half of a book left to, like, resolve all that. I just feel like the pacing is going to be off now.
Romeo and Juliet, dude, they're going to kill themselves.
I think maybe Saren, you know, does something and turns into a tree, like, permanently.
I think so.
And then Owen either just, like,
rips his
heart
out,
lives alone for the rest of his life maybe just like, you know, helping his sister like grow up or whatever.
Yeah.
I don't see like how he returns to like his dream of marrying that girl that worked at the train station that he thought was like the hottest chick in town or whatever.
He becomes Tom Bombadil.
Because he's loved a tree at this point. So how do you go back to, you know, just a train station ticketer? It's not the same anymore. Could have been with a tree.
That's heavy, dude. This book is good.
I am really enjoying it. I look forward to finishing it.
Me too.
I just worry about the pacing.
Yeah. I think it'll be good. I mean, like you said, it's been an easy read. I think it'll be less action-packed than what we're probably anticipating. But I think it, I don't know, I think it'll pace out well. I like how the chapters are split up from like short, quick perspective swaps.
Mm-hmm.
And honestly, dude, I'm just looking forward to the rest of it. Like, I'm really happy with the book we picked after Lord of the Rings, especially.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. Yeah. It's just super light. It's super easy to get into.
For sure.
There's not really any stakes. It is a good follow-up to Lord of the Rings because, you know, Lord of the Rings is the exact opposite of all that.
Yeah. And I mean,
Lord of the Rings takes effort.
It kind of had interesting pacing too. So maybe this will do some stuff like that because, I don't know, maybe some of it will be like, and they had to sit around for a week. So it's like, you can't really talk about that much. But then while that's going on, you know, the war is waging or who knows. But
yeah.
All right. Well.
Yeah, I guess that's about it, right?
Yeah. You guys know how to find us. anchor.fm/ears-stamps.
Mm-hmm.
Special thanks to Kenneth Garman for the intro again and being a regular guest on the show. And
yeah, sorry about last week's episode. I know I already apologized for it for last week's episode on the recording. But that sucked. It was stupid.
But yeah, thank you too, Kenneth, for the, you know, for being here and writing our music and, you know, go to Anchor to support us. I know I already said that, but just, that's a way you can support us directly and you can find links to all our social media. Mm-hmm. And then, you guys know what to do. Read the next half of the book.
Yep. Finish it.
Finish it. Yeah.
And then we're going to do something. I don't know. I think we still need a week before the Joan Ho novel.
Yeah. Maybe, I don't know. Maybe we can do something new, something fun. I think it'd be cool if we both wrote like a short story, about being a tree.
About being a tree.
Yeah. It'd just be a fun, like, exercise, I think, in writing. Like if we just wrote like, I don't know. We don't have to. I feel like it might be fun if we...
I think we could read whatever section we're going to read of Joan Ho's novel, but we'd have to... Like, it would come out, like, a day before we recorded. We'd just have to cram it.
Okay.
We'll figure it out, and we'll let y'all know.
Yeah. But, yeah. So, just read the next section of the book, and, mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll figure it out, like you said, and let you know.
Figure out what happens to Tree Bay.
Yeah, I'm excited. I have a feeling she's going to turn into a tree.
Yeah.
And I don't want that.
Yeah, that's too bad. I want a Tree Bay to stick around.
Yeah, me too.
All right, I'm Will Hedrick.
I'm Jordan Schaffer.
This is Dog Ears and Timestamps. God, I've had these fucking, like, all-day migraines for, like, 4 days in a row now. It's fucking sweet.
It's fucking sweet. That sucks, dude. I'm sorry.
Like, I don't really know if they're... I just deal with it. I don't even know if they're migraines because people describe migraines as being like this debilitating thing, right? Like it just ruins your fucking day. So maybe they're not migraines because I'm able to get through the day. But I also didn't recognize that I had anxiety attacks for a really long time because I just thought, oh, this is just something that happens. And then I finally realized one day, I was like, oh, wait, no, this is an anxiety attack. Maybe I should treat it that way.
What's that saying? Like, we all experience our own truths. Well, so like,
I'm just right. Kidding.